Welcome to a new episode of Content Rookie. I'm really excited about this one, and fun fact, Jen and I actually already recorded this episode way back in December, but unfortunately the recording broke, so I wasn't able to use it. So we had to find a time to re-record, and with two busy schedules, it took us a while, but it's finally here, an episode all about freelancing. Now, Jen and I, we met at a perspectives conference a while back and really hit it off because she runs an incredible freelance business and she's been doing that for years. And I think there's a ton to learn from her. So I'm really excited to have her on for this episode. So if you're at all curious about freelancing as a content writer, copywriter, content marketer, or content designer, this is the episode for you. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Jennifer. Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hi, my name is Jen. I'm, I guess, a freelance copywriter, content writer with Jen Marie Writing and Marketing.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining today. And I already said it a little bit in the introduction, but we're talking specifically about freelancing in content today because you've been doing that for a while and you have a really interesting story of how you got into it and a wealth of experience to share. So I would love to just, you know, listen in a little bit to how you ended up being a freelancer and specifically in content. So why don't you let us know?
Yeah, it's a great question. Okay, so I think I kind of like accidentally backed into it, I guess the best way to put it. I'd actually worked as a freelance journalist for a while. I was working for a newspaper, and that also was an accidental. I was delivering newspapers. I was in the circulation department, and I wrote an essay for school. I was also a college student at the time, and I was really proud of it, and I shared it with one of the publisher. And the next day I came into work, he said, "You're not a writer." I was like, "Oh, interesting. Okay." So so that was my start in writing. And years later, about 10 years later, I believe, I had some health issues. And I was home and I was looking for some way to work from home from a computer. And this was back in like 2000, goodness gracious, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8. And I started looking online for online money-making opportunities, and here we go. Now I was a content writer. It made sense at the time because I figured, okay, I know how to write. I've been working for a newspaper for a couple years, or I did that for a couple years. And it seemed easy, but it was not easy at first because, you know, the pay was ridiculously low. I believe my first project I was making about $2 to $3 an hour. Because I had to get the whole speed thing down, and it was repetitive, and it was just, oh my goodness, it was not fun at all. But I stuck it out. I kept writing. I kept figuring out ways to go faster, figuring out ways to compete with what was becoming a global market. So by the time about, oh my gosh, I'm getting dates all mixed up in my head now. So I think it was about 2012. Yeah, no. I'm getting dates all mixed up, Nicole, now. Oh my God, I feel really old.
It doesn't matter. I think, yeah, we get the idea of the journey.
yeah, it was a long time ago. But I was able to touch a whole bunch of different aspects of content at a very earlier time in the content ecosphere. I think it was around 2010. I wrote copy for an app, and I didn't even really have apps like on my phone at that time. I wasn't like a big app user, and so the client was really explaining like how this was gonna, where the content was going, because I didn't have like a concept of how that was gonna look. There was no, you know, diagrams or anything to work with. I got to touch a lot of different things early in my career because everyone was just, there wasn't like content strategists or UX writers or any of that stuff. Right. It was just writers.
Yeah.
And they were just asking for everything.
Yeah. I remember those times as well. I started a little bit later than you, but I keep saying this to people when they ask me to talk about my career history that like, yeah, I do content design now, but I've done it like for many years. It just wasn't a thing back then. It just looked a little different and there were no processes or really best practices. And I find that really interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I'm just going to give the listeners a little bit of context. So you and I, we met last year on a conference called Perspectives, where we specifically talked, we did like a Q&A where people could ask questions about freelancing, and we were on that panel. And I remember really admiring everything that you were sharing, specifically since you didn't hold back about how hard you had to hustle for many, many years to really break into the field as a freelance writer. And we connected after, and I remember us having a conversation about how I feel very similar about that. And you know, I teach a lot of writing and content design and content marketing, and people go into freelancing really blue-eyed. I'm going to be my own boss. I'm going to have a lot of freedom. They see the freelance rates that you can sometimes get when you work for really big companies and think like, wow, like I'm going to make so much money. But the reality is that many of them never actually will be able to charge those rates. It can be very difficult to break into the field to make your name and to really, you know, maintain those relationships with clients and companies takes so much effort and so many skills beyond writing. And so I'm just curious to hear, like a little bit more about how you managed to hustle through and then really build your kind of own little freelance business, because I know now you also have some people that work together with you. So to just share a little bit more.
Absolutely. Okay, so I guess for context, I have to say prior to doing the freelancing writing, I was working as a freelance promotional model and like event marketing stuff. And you have to just apply. My strategy for that career was applying to as many projects as I could, like as many. And it was you sign up with different agencies to get listed as someone who's able to work. And I had a full spreadsheet of over 100 agencies that I collected, just going online and searching for different agencies. And I signed up with as many as I possibly could. So there was always work flowing to me. When I switched over to doing writing, I took the same approach and signed up with as many platforms as I could. Again, this was early, like 2009, 2010. And a lot of the platforms we have today were just in their infancy. I was active on, I was like, Sarah's active on Odesk, which was now, is now Upwork, and whatever site they had, Odesk and Elance. And that merged later on to become Upwork. But there was probably about 10 or 15 different platforms that I went and joined. And my idea was the same as what I did previously. It was just get your name out there as much as possible and list yourself as much as possible and pick and choose through the work. I also competed a lot. I didn't think of myself as an American writer. I went in as a global writer. And this was important because it's an important distinction because I remember seeing other writers out there from America that were really using that as like a marketing thing for them, or like, I am American, so I have to make $6 or $7 an hour. I have to make 10 or whatever. Not really thinking about it from the global perspective of who's actually available to do the work. And I was always thinking of it from that point of view. So as I said at the beginning, when I first started, my first project was $3 an hour. And when I started competing against everyone else, I figured, okay, the world is bigger than where I'm actually from. I need to be able to compete against everyone else who's going to be like $5 an hour or be willing, happy to take $5 an hour.
Right.
And I did, you know. And I think early on that was kind of controversial because most people weren't willing to go that low. But I just figured that was just what I was going to have to do and just bid against those people, but show how I was different than them. And so I grabbed a lot of stuff that I think most people wouldn't want. And I built relationships. Some of the clients I have now are, we're at our 9-year mark right now. From that original couple years of me doing that. And I just raised prices over time till it got to the point where it was a sustainable income for me. And that took, goodness, I think that took like 4 years, 4 or 5 years before I was, getting enough sustainable income. And in those first 4 to 5 years, before I was able to ask for $30, $40 an hour for my time, I just did as many projects as possible. It was just loading it on thick, which I could do years ago. I can't do that now. Another thing, a big game changer for me was, I think about 3 or 4 years in, and I'm guessing, I try to remember time-wise, I started getting help. I was taking a lot of projects because they were so low paid. I had to prioritize on being fast. That way I can do like 5,000, 6,000 words a day. And at the beginning, I was probably doing about that many words a day. But then it was exhausting and I was making mistakes. And so first I brought in the editor just to check my work. And then I started realizing I can't write all of this. I brought in other people to write. And that's how my team developed, because there was enough work at the time to just keep, I think at one point up to six people helping me do all the content that I was doing. But again, this was because I focused on the lower price stuff and came up with a system to do it as fast as possible.
Right. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot to tap in here. I'm curious, you mentioned a little bit how you started with really low rates and then you raised them over time, and a lot of your clients stayed loyal to you anyway. And this is actually also one of the experiences I feel like I made way too late. I was really hesitant to raise rates with long-term clients. So I'm just curious how you approach those kind of negotiations.
Absolutely. Number one, I kept scaling up every year.
Yeah.
Learn, learn, learn. There's always new techniques or strategies or whatever you can put into your writing. Especially when since I kind of do some SEO, so keeping abreast on that when I even though I didn't really need to. The second, typically my clients were making money because of what I was doing, and I could see that. And the way I feel about my work, if I'm not helping your bottom line, I don't want to be there. So, there's a bit of a confidence that I have going in. If I've been with you for a couple years, and I typically start on year two with the raising of rates, then that means that I'm producing for you. So it's a lot of calling their bluff in that regard of, okay, I'm gonna raise it, and you're not gonna back down. Researching the market a lot, knowing what people are charging, still probably going a 10% lower than whoever I feel I'm competent to. I still do that. And keeping it small, I just call it a price of living increase. I just say, things cost more nowadays, so you should pay me more. And I'm pretty simple about it. And it's not that high. It's like 5%,
But it
unless
makes a
it's something
difference.
drastic.
Yeah, exactly. But it makes a difference. You also mentioned that you got help once you started getting more traction. And I'm curious to hear what did you look for in the people that you work with now? Were there specific kind of green flags for you, or maybe even specific red flags, people you then didn't end up working with? I think that can be really useful because freelancing is such a trust-based business, right? Like I sometimes outsource work to other freelancers and then I put my reputation on the line and it works the other way around. And I've actually made some bad experiences with referring other people that then disappointed the client and that kind of fell back on me. So I'm really curious to hear what you look for.
That's a great question. Basically, I'm looking for people who love to write. And I know that seems overly simple, but that is really my magic sauce in finding writers. And people who have a skill for conversational writing, but really writing like they talk. Like when I interview, I don't interview anybody that I work with. I don't feel that having verbal skills necessarily correlates to having writing skills, because that's something that I personally deal with. I write way better than I talk. So one of my things I've noticed I've never done with any of my writers is interview them on the phone. I don't need to. They need to be able to talk clearly to me in an email, period. And they need to be able to differentiate between like talking to me and selling to me and being like professional. So there's a subtle difference when someone's like applying for a job, you know, because people email me and it's like, I want to write for you. And are they just talking to me? Like, is it just like they were to come up to me and just be like, hey, how can I work with you? Or is it this form letter of dear sir slash madam, I would like to do work for your organization.
I recognize those.
I can tell a lot from just that initial communication, and it's as much. I don't even read resumes. If you send me a resume, I'm probably not going to read it. It's all in just how you communicate your skills and how you're backing it up with how you're talking to me. Then I look at the samples. When I read their writing, does it bore me? Do I get excited about reading it? I don't care if they have any type of like freelancing experience. That's my role, I feel, is to find the work and make sure that they get paid. That's why they came to me. Like, why would somebody want to work with me over like just starting their own freelance business? Oh, right, because they don't want to deal with the starting their freelance business part. I'm doing that for them. And so I don't even worry about that. And I think a lot of people, when they're hiring writers to work with them, not to work for them, they get caught up in the, oh, how established are they with their business, or what clients do they have, or any of that stuff. Nah, if they are good at that, then they don't need me. So I just want the people who just love to write and can write like they talk. That just make me feel like I'm talking to a real person online, because that's what my clients are going to want.
Yeah, I think
Everything else you can learn.
that's a really good summary of what you should look for, and actually is pretty in line with also my experiences of finding good people versus finding people that then ended up not being a great fit. So I think that's some really good advice there. Kind of tapping into that, you mentioned a little bit the people that want to work with you maybe don't want to actually build their own freelance business and they kind of outsource that to you. So I'm curious what, in your opinion, are some of those skills that you need and have that help you run a successful freelance business and, you know, bring in new work and, you know, like have those long-term relationships with clients and companies.
Understanding the value of what we're doing. I think, writing and marketing, trying to choose my words wisely here. But I come from a marketing background. Before I was doing the writing and before I had this stint in journalism, I did a lot of customer service and sales and pre-sales and, going out and describing products or whatever for the purpose of selling something. And that is a completely different brain, that is mindset, excuse me, than writing. Like, it literally feels like a different side of my brain. And that's why when I came up with my company's name, Generary Writing and Marketing, it was kind of a chuckle to me, because it's like, oh, right, that's like left right for me. And I truly believe that someone who's really talented at writing is gonna not be as great at really selling content. It's just a different type of thing. And so I am good at selling content, I believe, and going and being able to really explain the value of it from a business perspective, not necessarily with, okay, you're going to get these numbers or whatever, but just with helping businesses understand why they need to have this content. And I think that might be one of the hardest part of being a freelance, having a freelance content business, is that aspect of it. I'm also very, I juggle a lot at one point. I'm not going to say I'm a good multitasker, but I am always multitasking. There's more than one thing going on in my head at one time. And I think that has helped me in, as I said in the beginning, how I like to just, my approach is signing up for as many platforms as possible and juggling all of that. That has been very useful in my business. So having multiple clients at one time, I think a lot of people would not prefer to do that. Like in a day, like dealing with three different writing assignments in one day for three different clients. And as someone who's managing that for someone, I am dealing with a lot of clients on a weekly basis, and being able to manage that part of it. Whereas if I was just writing, I would prefer to just have like one client and just work on that one thing that whole week and be able to focus on it and really dive into it. My personality is better suited for being able to like switch around and have all those different I'm gonna say the things in the iron, you know. Have all those different things going on at the same time.
Yeah, I understand that. I think that's a really good summary. It's pretty similar for me. I always kind of also had at least like I would say two clients in a day, but sometimes up to like six, seven. I mean, that's a lot of communication. It's a lot of context switching. That's a lot of just, being on and having to be responsive and adjusting. I think it really like I have ADHD and I actually feel that it benefits me almost because I'm really good at kind of snapping in and out of those things. But I've also seen that most, in air quotes, normal people would struggle with it. So it's probably one of the actually positive sides of being a little neurodivergent. I find it really interesting. All right, Jen, as we're kind of getting towards the end of this conversation, we talked a little bit about it before we hit record, but I'm curious to just hear your thoughts on the newer AI writing tools and how you imagine, or maybe even are already seeing, that affect the market for freelance writing as a whole and where you think it may end up.
Yeah, this one is such a big question right now, and it's kind of the hot topic, right? I'm a little bit discouraged by the AI tools that are out right now, and general people's reliance on that for information sourcing. Gosh, let me take a step back. I like AI tools for information sourcing. I get it. A lot of people cannot or don't have the time to go through and put in as much effort to finding the information that's out there. And these tools can help us in finding things faster. But that is where I think we need to draw the line. It's one thing to find the information faster and just put it there for us to use. It's another to just present that as the information. Context, as you mentioned before, is a huge part of human understanding. And when we rely on AI tools to provide, not just provide the information, but also provide that context for us, we are missing out on the full scale of that information. And this is what I feel like so many people are missing. Everyone's getting so excited about the tool and forgetting to think about how we should be best using it. And maybe we'll get to the point where we start to remember and think about, okay, yeah, this is okay, we have this tool, cool. Now let's talk about how we're going to effectively use it. Maybe we'll get there. I've I'm an early adopter to like the internet, and I'm taking a step back to say it. But it kind of saw the same thing happen with the internet. You know, we first had it and everyone's just like, oh, we have this wonderful tool. We can talk to people now. And we just went crazy with it in the 90s. Mm. And we tried everything and did everything with it until we finally got to the point of where we are now of defining how we're going to use the internet in our world. And that's where we are with the AI language tools right now. We're still in that defining what's good and what's acceptable and what's not.
Right.
I don't think we should be using AI tools to communicate with each other. I think we are missing out on what the beauty of human interaction is and human language can be by letting computers write the things that we read all the time.
Yeah.
I see communication as it's an art form. It's not just a manipulation of words so that other people, it's not just like making a code that we all read and agree upon. It's also about making it entertaining, different, you know, and putting the emotions in there, relaying. There's so much potential to a word and how we use it. And computers just haven't gotten that nuance yet. Especially when you're trying to convince people to take an action or feel a certain way about something, how can you expect a computer to do that for you? Right. You can't.
Yeah.
And people will realize that eventually.
Yeah.
So right now I feel like we're in that ooh and ah stage where everyone's just like totally grasping this new technology. And just give them a few years and then they'll just be like, oh, wait, we need our artists. We need our actual writers.
Yeah, I totally agree with that take, to be honest. That's pretty much exactly how I view it. Also with a similar time horizon, I think it will take a couple of years. It will probably get worse before it gets better. But I do think really passionate writers, experienced writers, writers that have really unique voices will stand the test of time. I think for me, the main hesitation is, and again, I see this a lot just because I teach a lot of specifically younger people who are really curious to get into writing or content design or copywriting. And I can see it getting harder for new people to really break into the industry. Because if instead of giving like a junior writer like a decent hourly rate and having them kind of build their skills, you could get decent output from, I don't know, an AI tool and just have someone more experienced rewrite that. So I think that for me is like the one caveat that I potentially see, but eventually the market will solve that as well.
I do want to share, someone had contacted me just recently, an interesting writing project, and they were asking me to basically do what the AI tools were doing.
Hmm.
As a comparison.
Hmm. All right.
And it was scientific writing. And I was getting, I'm still at the point of getting clarification as to what the project is, but it was really interesting to me. I'm like, okay, good. We're starting to ask these questions. Yeah. We're starting to ask the questions. So that's a step in the right direction of now people are like questioning whether they can replace their content with these tools or not. And actually doing those tests.
Finally.
So
yeah that's really good to hear that some people are already kind of looking at it that way. All right, well, thank you so much, Jen. I think this was a super valuable conversation. I'll put all your details in the info box so anyone that wants to reach out can find your contact details. Thanks again for doing this. I'm so happy to have you on and like how openly you share like about all of your experience and what you're doing. I think it's like so beautiful to have someone be so frank and so open, because I feel like a lot of freelancers are usually quite closed. Like it's almost like, should I reveal this business secret or whatnot? And I'm totally with you on trying to be as open as possible, because I think like even if we share most of our knowledge, it's still hard enough.
It is, absolutely. And the other reason I'm so open is because as a consumer of the internet, as a consumer of technology, I want the content we're using to be better. So if anything I say is going to inspire someone else to be as passionate about who someone who is as passionate about good content and the things that we read and interact with to make a change in what I'm reading online, then I'm all about it. It's an investment in all of our experience for me.
Totally agree. Thank you so much again, Jen. This was lovely.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of Content Rookie. Thanks again for listening. Thank you to everyone that is sending me lovely messages and feedback. Keep it coming, and I hope you tune in again next time. Bye-bye.